This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now, moving on to our next story, today is World Refugee Day, so it is a good idea to perhaps explore how well Malaysia is doing when it comes to protecting the rights of refugees and asylum seekers.
Now, globally, we're seeing the highest number of refugees ever in almost 70 years. The UNHCR said that over 70 million people fled war, persecution, and conflict last year. Malaysia has a sizable population of refugees and asylum seekers. There are over 170,000 registered with UNHCR in the country alone, and 87% of them, or slightly more than 147,000, are refugees from Myanmar.
The problem is that we're still actually not a signatory to the 1951 Refugee Convention or the 1967 Protocol. So Malaysia doesn't have a legal or administrative framework regulating the status and rights of refugees in Malaysia. And slightly more disturbingly, also a recent survey of over 18,000 adults globally by Ipsos found that over 50% of Malaysians believe that refugees coming into the country are economic migrants and want to claim welfare benefits.
Oh.
So it does mirror sentiments that are seen in other nations as well, the likes of India, Turkey, South Africa and Great Britain, where they also believe that the refugees coming into the country were not genuine.
But the study also found that while more than half of Malaysians surveyed believe people had the right to seek refuge or, you know, to say, escape war and persecution, it was almost an even split as to whether Malaysia should accept refugees.
Yeah, it is an interesting takeaway that despite the exploding crisis that we're seeing right now when it comes to refugees, that world perception towards refugees haven't really been heading in a direction where it's positive. In fact, it's gotten much worse, that we do have an increasing negative attitude towards refugees and asylum seekers.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I think in the past 3 to 4 years, and you can see that in political developments or in elections, be it in North America and in Europe, where these attitudes, especially swinging to the right, and that sort of conservatism about how societies view refugees and their role in our societies, it's certainly gone that way. And I think what's certainly real is that it has a real impact on our society, a real economic impact, but certainly there needs to be a humane perspective as to how we perceive this and how we actually move forward to solving this problem.
And seeing as it is a problem that the world is currently facing, there does seem to be a need for a more global concerted effort. So after this, we'll be speaking to Lillian Fan, the co-founder and international director at Gutanio. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
7:19 p.m. on the Evening Edition. It's Kelvin and Ezra here. And of course, today it's World Refugee Day. And, we're taking a look at this particular story. As mentioned, globally, we're seeing the highest number of refugees ever in almost 70 years. The UNHCR said that almost over 70 million people fled war, persecution, and conflict last year. We're crossing over now to Lillian Fan, co-founder and international director at Gutanio Foundation. Lillian, thank you for joining us. I guess we wanted to ask, how has the situation changed in the past year for refugees and asylum seekers globally?
Thank you, Kelvin. It's actually really been quite a grim year for refugees and asylum seekers for a few reasons. One, of course, as you mentioned, the numbers have just continued to rise. And we really are now seeing the highest number of displaced people in recent history. There's actually been a huge increase in displacement, both internal displacement as well as external displacement. There's really been a continuation of most of the conflicts that these refugees are fleeing from. There's also been new kinds of situations, such as what we see in Venezuela, of insecurity, that are also causing a lot of displacement as well. And we've also seen the continuation of a rise in right-wing politics, which is another reason that many refugees actually can't find safe sanctuary and asylum, even in countries which have signed the Refugee Convention. So it really isn't, it really hasn't been a good year for refugees globally. But having said that, there have been a few small trends which I think particularly in a few developing countries where we've seen a little bit of a shift in some policy thinking around, you know, the need to look for sustainable solutions for people in refugee situations.
And I guess then, what are some of those solutions that have been in place? I think some research would suggest that, you know, attitudes have been shifting towards the for refugees and asylum seekers, that the attitude has been quite negative still, unfortunately.
Well, I think it has, and I think it's been a little bit of a mixed picture. I mean, I think, you know, you actually still do see the fact that the largest number of refugees, refugee-hosting countries, the countries actually hosting the largest number of refugees continue to be developing countries. But, of course, that comes with challenges because a lot of these developing countries, of course, also have their own populations which are facing a lot of difficulties, such as poverty and other types of, you know, marginalization. So it's not an easy ask to try to demand, you know, countries that are already facing a lot of their own development challenges to host a large population. But you have seen, for example, I mean, I'm talking here from Bangladesh, and I was just visiting the camp in Cox's Bazar. There's now the largest refugee camp in the world in Cox's Bazar in Kuttupalong. And the fact that you do have countries like Bangladesh who are, you know, also struggling with a lot of poverty issues and underdevelopment issues, particularly in that area, have continued to host over a million refugees, even without signing the Refugee Convention. I think that is still a sign that there is solidarity. But at the same time, it's also very challenging. You don't really have sustained funding for this situation here and, of course, the growing number of situations across the world. Funding refugee responses in the humanitarian sense is very challenging to do in a multi-year, you know, kind of situation. So actually what you really do need is sustainable solutions, which, number one, of course, the ultimate solution is actually to put an end to the conflicts and the situations that refugees flee from. And there I think we haven't really seen much movement. We've really not seen much political will to resolve the conflicts, you know, such as in Yemen. Venezuela, of course, is, you know, still really descending into crisis. Myanmar, where the Rohingya are from, but also many other ethnic groups who have had to flee because of internal conflict and persecution and, you know, widespread discrimination. There's also very little end in sight for most of these conflicts. So there, I think, we're not doing well in terms of finding the political will to resolve conflict. Where we are doing a little bit better, I would say, is in certain countries, including in Malaysia, actually there's been an increasing will to have discussions, to have actually some policy-level thinking about ways forward. Many of these countries haven't yet formed clear policies on exactly what we're going to do, and, you know, there are a lot of pros and cons, there's a lot of weighing of options, there's a lot of thinking about, well, if we are kinder to refugees and if we're more forthcoming in protecting refugees, is that going to just be a pull factor? But I think one of the things that governments need to remember is there will always be a push factor, and that's the biggest reason why refugees flee. It's really because there is a war in their country, there is an unsustainable, insecure situation in their country. That's the biggest push. It's not really, you know, that they'll come to a country just because you have good refugee policies. So it is a bit of a mixed picture.
Lillian, we mentioned earlier that, you know, of the 170,000 registered with UNHCR in Malaysia, about 87% of them, that's about 147,000 thereod, are refugees from Myanmar. So if we were to focus on Southeast Asia specifically, what developments have you seen in the Rohingya situation, and where do you see things going over the coming years?
Well, I have to say that, unfortunately, we haven't really seen any significant progress for the Rohingya situation. You know, the solutions I think that need to be forged are really in Myanmar, and it has to be there has to be some real political will to trying to look at the root causes of the conflict, and I wouldn't even call it conflict, it's really discrimination and violence, and very targeted violence against a population that has been made stateless because of the 1982 citizenship law, which really stripped them of citizenship. And because of that, there's been, you know, really a denial of all kinds of basic human rights, from access to education to the basic freedom of movement, to the rights to have family, the right to even have children without being, you know, sort of penalized and having to ask for permission. And there's really been very little that's changed. In fact, there is, of course, you know, talk about preparation within Myanmar that Myanmar's done to encourage the repatriation of these refugees. But actually, the fundamental changes which are needed haven't really not been addressed at all. There's the kind of preparation that has been done is really very superficial. It's really only at the level of infrastructure, developing transit centers, reception centers to process returnees when they come back. And that's really not what the Rohingya need. I mean, the reason they fled was because of persecution and violence and the lack of human rights. And what they really do need is recognition of an identity, documents, the right to nationality, and actually having basic security, safety. These are very basic issues, which nobody will feel safe returning, you know, without any of those guarantees. So I don't actually see much progress in Myanmar itself. ASEAN has been more engaged in the issue. That's one positive thing, I think. But I think that it's also, you know, the political will to really put the right kind of pressure on Myanmar to actually increase the human rights that are needed to encourage return, you know, hasn't been very strong either. So I have to say there isn't really a very clear end in sight to this crisis, and Bangladesh has is probably going to be hosting a very large population of Rohingya refugees for a long time to come, and so will we in Malaysia and many of the other countries in the region. So that's where we really need to start thinking about, you know, what are we going to do as a region to try to make sure that we're not just leaving an entire generation, you know, out of any kind of basic human development. So how do we ensure that refugees can become more self-sufficient? How do you actually empower refugees to be able to take care of their own communities? How do you give a little bit of access to livelihoods? How do you give access to education, to healthcare? In Malaysia, we actually have quite good access to healthcare. And I think that's something that the Malaysian government should be congratulated for. That we are starting to think about ways of allowing refugees to sustain themselves through livelihoods. We haven't really got there yet in terms of granting work rights, but we have been piloting a few programs. We do allow refugees to have some self-employed work. So I think that it's an evolving policy landscape and evolving discussions, but I really do hope that we'll be more progressive in the ways that we think about protecting refugees.
Well, Lillian, thank you very much for joining us today. That was Lillian Fan, co-founder and international director at Gutenyo Foundation. She's also the chair of the Rohingya Working Group at the Asia-Pacific Refugee Rights Network. We've got the 7:30 news coming up right after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.